Well, follow with the questions. If anyone have one question, one observation or contribution to the table, yes, yes, please.
Hi. We were talking before in this previous meeting. You were talking about how the premier in South Australia was asking for police department of INSAB or Filipino policies to be working. So, what do you think are the key elements for health to be the head of the minister, or you know, at this level, like you explain, South Australia and Norway?
Well, there's always two things. I mean, first of all, I think sometimes we're too cynical about politicians. You know, there might be a whole range of reasons to be that. But, I mean, obviously, in a politician, always two things come together, and at least that's been my experience. One is that a fair amount, let's put it this way, a fair amount of politicians have a personal agenda, you know, something they want to change. And so that's one thing. And the other thing is, you know, because they're a politician, they get elected, they are interested in what the electorate thinks. And therefore, I think those are two absolutely critical elements in terms of also the framing of the issues. And I mean, for the premier in South Australia, it was clear to him, based on the evidence, that he had to reduce childhood obesity, but he was also clear that his electorate wasn't interested in hearing that message, because you know, it challenged their lifestyle. And therefore, part of the challenge was, you know, how can one, rather than say, you know, you're all fat and do something about it, how can one take this forward in different ways, through environmental measures, through health literacy issues, etc., etc. So it's, you know, all that's why, and I think that's why your point was so important about contextualizing the issue. And, you know, in many cases, even if a politician is personally totally convinced by your data, unless he's suicidal, he's not necessarily, you know, going to work against his electorate. It also depends, you know, of course, how are people more elected individually or as party people, or, you know, there's. So I think there's a lot of that we must consider. In South Australia, it was quite clear there were two big agendas. One was a healthcare agenda, because health was getting to be more and more expensive. And since it's a national health system, one of the challenges was that health was becoming unpopular within government and outside of government, because it was taking resources away from others. So actually, health was taking resources away from education. But the electorate was much more conscious about the money going into the health sector, you know, this sort of crisis thing, I want my hospital, rather than thinking of the long-term impact the cuts in education were going to have on their own children. Yeah. So so that was very, very clear, and it was clear, and there was one graph that showed how health systems financing would not be sustainable anymore in South Australia. And it was, you know, this one graph that actually created the most arguments and the most activity. And then the question was, you know, what do you do, and who has to contribute? And in a way, the health sector was, I would say, a bit relieved, because it didn't get all the blame, you know, because in a way, once you say, like you rightly did, you know, a lot of the problem is created elsewhere, so let's work on that. And in Australia, South Australia, we had one more interesting thing which really shifted also the Premier's thinking, was that they had created targets for South Australia, you know, for the development of the state, which would be like your last point, you know, sort of how is the whole country doing, how's the whole state doing, and we helped them. We actually applied a health lens to those targets, and we said, you know, in some cases you don't need extra money to do this, but in this case, again to use your example, if you top up the investment in education a bit, we're not going to need that money over here. And in that sense, it actually helped make the health ministry a much more popular place, because they weren't only grabbing the money for themselves, they were actually saying, guys, we need you, and we understand you need some money to do these things. So that enabled a different kind of political debate, which was politically helpful for the Premier, because the fight, you know, some fights stopped. It turned around in terms of the discussions like you had with your director generals. They have, you know, in South Australia, the executive committee, and this is where those fights are fought, and they shifted. So those are some elements, but those elements, you know, very much have, health in all policies is incredibly contextual, and therefore it needs, you know, very astute analyses of the political environment, but also of the personal motivation of decision makers. And, you know, we know all the old stories. My mother has depression and suddenly I'm interested in mental health services. Yeah. But people are just human. Yeah. And then the question is, you know, how can it be used? Should it be used? You know, what do we need to do?
Mm-hmm. Is there another question? Any more to comment? No.
You can ask in Catalan.
I think they understand me very well now, no? With the questions.
Well, maybe I could ask a question. One of our main issues is that our timetable is different from the technical point of view than from the political point of view. In some occasions, the political we have, the politicians are giving big support or high support to the plan, but in some occasion they are asking for results only 1 year after the beginning of the implementation. And it's difficult to explain that we need some time. For instance, in the case of tobacco, that we need more or less 20 years here in Catalonia, in Spain, in order to put in practice the law that forbid to smoke in public places and other things. We still have a very low price for the pack of cigarettes here in Spain, and we have many things to do. But we need 20 years in order to change the consideration of the population about tobacco. Mm-hmm. And now we need to work with sugary drinks, with many type of foods and other things. And we need also to change the mind of population and also politicians. But in some cases, they ask us for resources on health. Only with a year of implementation is difficult. What is your advice in this case? How combine them?
Well, I think a big step is reached when a politician can use the word epidemiology without tripping over the term. It's always one of these issues about health literacy of politicians, whether they can say epidemiology tested on one stage. But no, on a serious note, I do think we really point one need to explain it better. I don't think we've done that. And with using other examples, you know, where which also take long. I mean, that's one thing. I think the other thing, though, is why do politicians want quick results? Because they want to get re-elected. Because they want to show that, you know, what I have done has made a difference. And for a politician, that's reasonably legitimate, let's say. You know, that's how the system works. So I do think we have to spend more time in, you know, John Lutbeam has developed this very nicely about, you know, talking about intermediate results and end results and whatever. I forget his direct terminology right now. But as we develop these projects, we have to think more about what can be done. You know, we won't find, it depends what you want. You know, do you want a law at the end of it? Do you want an epidemiological result, you know, less cancer? Or do you want a people behavior result, less people smoking, etc.? I think we have to be very, very precise and also tell the politicians, you know, in 1 year you can get this result and you can show off with it. In 2 years you can get this. And but, you know, the final. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that actually we ourselves have shot ourselves in the foot sometimes. We've said, oh, it takes so long to get results in non-communicable diseases, etc. But, you know, after... When the Irish did their tobacco legislation, you know, within a year they were able to show health results. So I think we ourselves have to be very careful, because there are things we can show in the short term. And if in some cases the short term is only quality of life, because don't forget, and your own policy says it, this is not only about health in the narrow term, it's about quality of life. And let me take the tobacco example from Switzerland. I mean, Switzerland has still not ratified the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, and it's one of those countries that, you know, has a failed prevention law, because it's all about individual responsibility and this and that and the other. But what happened? Ticino, south of Switzerland. Ticino is next to Italy. All the middle class and rich people of Ticino like to go to Italy to eat, because it's nice, it's good, and it's cheaper. So what happens? Italy introduces smoke-free restaurants. All these Ticinese go there, and at first they complain, and then they find experience. My God, this is really nice here. So what happens? They start a people's movement. We want smoke-free restaurants in Ticino. Everybody, you know, was rubbing their eyes in Switzerland. What is this? What are they up to? You know. So this wasn't really... this wasn't a health movement. I mean, it was picked up by the health department and everything. This was a quality of life thing. They wanted restaurants in Ticino where they could eat without tobacco smoke. And, you know, that the minute you adopted the law, you had the improved quality of life. So I think we also have to revisit some of our indicators, because then, obviously, you know, you're not going to have a reduction of lung cancer in 2 years by no smoking in restaurants, and it's only one of many measures that you want. But to be able to say, look, you know, suddenly... and the interesting thing was that, of course, the restaurants in Ticino fought against it, and so did the news, all our customers, etc., etc. What happened was that they had a shift of customers. So, you know, for example, they have much more families coming, going out to eat, whereas, you know, some single smokers did I don't know what. So again, it becomes interesting to analyze who is your support. So obviously then you want to work with your media team or whoever who then, you know, says not, you know, don't smoke, but you interview these nice family fathers who say, you know, now on Saturday I take my wife and the children out for food because there is no more smoking in the restaurant. So I think we have to be much more cleverer. And you know, and that's something a politician hears, you know, hey, this was me that got this law through, that you can do this. So those are some of the things that become important. Frequently we ourselves, we say in, you know, the introduction, this is about quality of life, and then later on in our measurements we forget the quality of life. And actually you had some nice, you know, like where you ask the population and they say, you know, this and this, all these six determinants before we even talk about the health system. So how do you go back to them on that, you know, and ask them and say, you know, I really like it that these restaurants have all this food. You see, you say the success is it's there. But you should, I think you must go the next step and ask the consumers now, you know, do you like this? And how many people are ordering this or using it? Do you, yeah? So something like that.
Perhaps I have one question.
Okay.
I remember me when you spoke now about a phrase that you said, decisions are taken in the board, outside the politicians, but sometimes perhaps the decisions are taken both political and board, but the next to political and board, the people who are in the schools, the teachers, the nurses, are not involved. So could be this kind of thing that the people who are working with the girls and the boys at the schools or are working at the hospitals, at the primary health attention, must be part of this kind of decision. If not, the things are not going well. Do you have some examples that all these people are involved in those decisions and could be more improvement in that?
Well, that was the start of our settings project. You know, when we said health promoting school, it was about the health of the children, the teachers, and the community. So it wasn't always implemented that way. The same was with the health promoting hospital. We said it's about the health of the staff, the patients, and possibly, you know, again, community health, like hospital waste, very, very big issue. And that means, you know, in all cases we recommended, and many settings did that. As you know, they created participatory structures where priorities were set in the hospital or in the school. And it's really fascinating how, and you know, that's also a difficult but interesting thing to bring across, how small those changes sometimes are. And they make an enormous difference. I remember from some of the health-promoting hospitals, it was, you know, in terms of the stress of the staff, it was some rather small changes in terms of the room and the facilities the staff had, you know, to move out when they had a break, because, you know, the rooms didn't allow that before. It made an enormous change. It cost practically nothing. Yeah. Nobody was interested in that before the participatory process started. So I think those processes are very, very important. And, you know, people themselves can tell you within an organization what is troubling for them. And really getting the message across, it's first of all, how much difference a small change can make for your own life, huh? And how much difference a small change can make for a larger group. Mm-hmm. And that also comes back partly to your question. I mean, I always love that public health statement that, you know, what we really want are small changes in a large population, mm-hmm. because they have such significant impact. And too often our messages and also in that participation thing come across as, you know, now we've got to do the really big thing. And you've really got to change your life. And this organization has really got to be turned around totally. And you know, and that is a disincentive for many people. It also threatens many decision makers. And it threatens people about how they live their everyday life. You know, what? You want me to change my whole diet? No, you know, just try eating no meat on Monday or something like that. So I think... That participatory element is important in several ways. People feel involved, they must be involved. They get more health literate as they are involved because they talk to each other, they ask questions, they take the issues home to discuss. They then can make suggestions. If a change occurs, they feel they've been heard, which means, you know, in terms of their mental health, they feel better. You start to create a positive cycle. Mm-hmm. And I'm very much, you know, for me it was the most, you know, important thing in the Ottawa Charter to really say, as you quoted, you know, life is created where people live, love, work and play. And, you know, now, of course, we sort of add where they shop and where they travel and where they Google. So it's, you know, how you make these small shifts. But the more you're involved yourself in any decision about yourself or about the organization mm-hmm. you're in, it makes a difference. What I meant with that slide was that decisions about our health are taken without political decision making. So, you know, what do I know? Nestle decides to put three more spoons of sugar into something, you know, and that's a decision taken in the boardroom. Or G3 decides, you know, we're really going to spread beer drinking, we're going to change the behavior of beer drinkers in Brazil, and that's basically what they did. And you know, to try and be clearer about the fact with politicians who say, you know, this interferes with people's personal decision in, you know, an inappropriate way, to be actually able to show much clearer how commercial determinants interfere with people's personal decisions mm-hmm. in an inappropriate way. And there are, you know, some very, very good suggestions about that. You go into the marketing literature and, you know, they are celebrated as the big successes of marketing. So, you know, that's where you can find the evidence. But the fact is, you know, how boardrooms and large companies must not have the ability to, you know, define the health of whole populations. Mm-hmm. And people, you know, it's each and every one of us that has to pay the consequence. And we pay for it twice, you know, we pay for the products and we pay for the health system and the costs that come afterwards. And yeah, I think maybe we also underestimate people. Maybe we do have to sometimes also explain those kind of interactions mm-hmm. Much more than and you know, people don't know anything about history. I mean, nobody knows that you know, tobacco wasn't introduced because we were all craving for it, you know. So many things that seem normal today and are defined as a right, didn't even exist 50
mm-hmm.
years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And to actually bring a slightly more historical dimension to some of these discussions would be very interesting, because, you know, we lived a rather good life then without it. And so I think we've got to be much cleverer in doing that.
Yeah, thank you. Well, if there is any question more, we finalize this table, this session, and perhaps I will finish with the first phrasal that Dr. Ilona Kishbuk say at the beginning of her presentation. He put it in the screen, a phrasal that say health should be a universal value and shared social goal and political objective for all. So I think this phrasal at the beginning summarize the most of the things that have said here in this session. Thanks a lot for the presentation. Thanks a lot, Dr. Carme Cabezas and Dr. Kishbuk. And we are very proud to have them here at the faculty and for this presentation. And thank you very much to you for being here to sharing this session. Thank you, Dolores.
Thank you.